Shelley's story. Shelley's story is a very sad window into how difficult it can be to deal with problems within one's assembly. All too often, when someone is suspected or even accused of inappropriateness with children in a church setting, people seem to want to keep a lid on this, to silence or blame the victim, particularly if the man accused is someone in a position of prominence. And they all too often are. And if anything can be seen throughout history, it is that people who want to oppress or take advantage of the vulnerable seem to do whatever it takes to get into a position which will allow them better access to victims and less chance of being accused. Shelley says,
I remember the whispering and the sudden outbursts of tears, my mother's stressed look, and my younger sister's unexpected departure for a prolonged visit to people I didn't know well and I knew my mother did not like very much. Maybe I would have paid more attention if I had not been going through the trauma of preparing to marry Derek, a man who, while a professed Christian, was not the person many people wanted me to marry. I am not only referring to my parents, but to Rachel and her husband Scott, and also to some of their hey-ho cronies who were influential people in the branch of Plymouth Brethren that I was raised in.
Shelley grew up not knowing what had happened to her younger sister, nor the man responsible for the abuse. These things were things she wasn't to know.
Questions were discouraged, as a general matter, of course. If there was a problem other than one of doctrine amongst the assembly, young girls were certainly not in receipt of the details. I was used to this, and I accepted it. I wish now that I had been more assertive.
Shelley was getting ready to marry Derek, the man who would be her husband and father of her children. She is still happily married to him 30 years later. The trouble was that Derek was new to the Brethren and not considered worthy of marrying a Brethren girl by Scott, the man with the most power in the assembly, who was married to Shelley's sister Rachel. In fact, when Derek asked for his place at the Lord's table, his brother-in-law Scott made sure Derek was refused, and even once the two were married, Scott insisted upon Shelley's husband Derek sitting in the non-member section in the back of the meeting room on Lord's Day mornings, as Derek had not been accepted to take his place at the Lord's table. If Shelley had been told what had happened to her younger sister and the name of the man responsible, what transpired a few decades later might have been avoided.
Many years later, my father was in the hospital. My mother required company round the clock, and I had done the night shift one Saturday night. On arriving home, I roused my two young teenage daughters, as usual, to prepare for Sunday morning meeting. My oldest burst into tears, and my youngest refused to leave her room. They had spent the night trying to work up the courage to tell me that the 5-year-old neighbor of my oldest sister and brother-in-law was in danger. I was confused. They explained that their Uncle Scott, the leading brother in our assembly, had been touching them and forcing them to touch him sexually for years. As if that was not enough, some of their cousins had been abused as well, and they had discussed it amongst themselves. Never sure what to do because the children were sure all the adults knew about the abuse and didn't care. The sad truth is that some of the adults did know and did not want to discredit the assembly in any way. Those little girls were abandoned to maintain the reputation of the Plymouth Brethren. After several weeks of tears and anger and many discussions with my daughters about how they wanted this to be handled, I called the police. We all knew what would happen if we simply went to the assembly. Scott would be disciplined. At best, he would be put out of fellowship, and how did that protect any of the other children he would meet in the future? At worst, and most likely, Scott and his influential friends would discredit the girls, and we would be the ones disciplined. We decided that the only course open to us was to hand the mess over to the police. We did. Scott was arrested. And after much equivocation on his part, I'm guilty, I'm not guilty, I might have been too nice to them, they're not liars, but I didn't do what they say I did, he entered a guilty plea and was imprisoned for 4 months of a 6-month sentence. The judge told us that his hands were tied and he would gladly have given a longer sentence, but we were satisfied. It was public, and Scott's name will be on the sexual offenders list till the day he dies. One thing that came out during all of the painful disclosure was the fact that Scott had molested my younger sister when she was a teenager. She had told our father, confident that it would be dealt with. Nothing was done. There was no reprimand, no assembly discipline, no guarding of his daughters and granddaughters from a man he knew was dishonorable. He did not wish to tarnish the reputation of the assembly. It was too hard for him to stand up against evil because at the end of the day, the meeting meant more to him than the girl's safety. My daughters have at least escaped the grip of the Plymouth Brethren Church, but many of their cousins and aunts are still stuck there. For the ones he abused, there is only silence and no help. They are girls, and their value is in their use to men. It is the sad and vile truth. No matter what is said, when a young woman is forced to keep silent about abuse in order to maintain her standing in the assembly, her lack of value is clear. The Plymouth Brethren's stand on outside authority makes it a dangerous church for young women. Sexual molestation of a minor is a crime. If the authorities in the church refuse to call in the authorities, they are also guilty of the crime, both before the law and morally. When a man who is a known offender is allowed free rein amongst the innocent and unsuspecting children and their equally unsuspecting parents, the responsibility for the crime lies at the door of all who knew of his guilt.
What Shelley is referring to in the latter paragraph is the fact that in 1 Corinthians 6 and 1, the Apostle Paul asks, "Dare any of you, having a matter against another, go to law before the unjust and not before the saints?" Sadly, too often this verse is used as a means of forbidding brethren people from going to the police, even when the assembly in question is very clearly lacking the wisdom and power to deal with the matter in-house, even when the matter isn't being dealt with at all. Shelley's father did not go before the saints, and so later, as a mother, she felt she had to go to the law about it. In fact, she'd have been breaking Canadian law if she didn't. The result, naturally, was that she immediately became very unpopular in her meeting and was seen as a threat to the system. Of course, if you take a close look at any large group of people, you are going to inevitably find that there are people who take advantage of others sexually. That's just human nature. One troubling thing, however, is the tendency of abusers to seek positions of power. In the Brethren systems, abusers are sometimes dealt with for their actions, and sometimes people even hear about it. What is unsettling is a constant trait connecting the various abusers across the continents and decades. They are legalists. They seek and gain and hold tightly to power. They are about control rather than love, and they are very, very hard to catch and remove. All too often, it's easier to just keep quiet about them. But the price that we pay for that is in the continuation of their abuse of vulnerable people until someone speaks up.